For May the 10th, 2019, we talk about the Sniper Elite Zombie Army Trilogy, Valve's Index VR system, and we ask you about games and pets. Welcome to Level 284. My name is Cole Ross.
My name is David Meismith.
I'm Jala Prendes.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you're listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Back here with Jala. It's been a little bit, Jala.
Yeah, I know. That's because Dennis popped out of his cistern for a minute, and then he like went and ran a half marathon, tripped, fell down the hill, and then rolled right back into it. So you're going to get me the sound of my dulcet tones for a few times in a row now.
It was a real slapstick show, yeah. No, he fell into the business cistern.
Yeah, he totally
I never understood. What is a dulcet?
Dulcet comes from the Latin root dulce for sweet, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Ah, okay.
Yeah, so sweet. Same thing with mellifluous. If you say somebody has mellifluous tones, it means honey-like.
Yeah.
Because mella. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay. You can totally do the thing. It's fine.
I need to ask if it's okay for me to know things.
No. You can be you, Cole. It's all good.
Yeah. Okay. If it can't be anywhere. No, sometimes I would do that, like at work. It'd be like, it would get down to the point where I would just say, all right, do you want to hear this? Or.
Oh man, that's horrible.
Okay. See, for me, it's kind of like, do you want to hear this? I mean, I'm going to tell you anyways, but it'd be interesting to know if you want to hear it.
Yeah.
Oh man. I just pop off and say things, as you are well aware. I am not that considerate, apparently.
I kind of was that guy at my old place of employment, and even in my family. So yeah, that's why it's dulcet. That's why it's mellifluous. Words are fun.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah.
Words with friends.
Be fair, they are what you do for a living.
True. I can't argue with that, which is kind of ironic given the line of conversation.
So getting back to the things. Yeah. So Dennis did, like, he's not here. He will tell you about it whenever he gets back, provided he remembers about it by the time he gets out of that cistern. Because, I mean, like, it's got multiple locks on it and shit.
I mentioned a business cistern, and then that immediately brings up a pleasure cistern, which I think was that place by the airplane. They got raided by the cops.
So, but the cistern that he fell in was past the finish line. So he did technically finish that marathon and it was cool. So like he'll tell you about that later, but good job, Dennis, if you are listening to this at a later juncture before you are back on.
Yeah.
So
you had a race here recently. Congratulations.
Not a race, but
no. Oh, I'm sorry.
Well, I guess it is a race. I mean, like a Go Ruck scavenger. It's a scavenger hunt where you have to get everything before everybody else. You have to dodge all the other teams, and you also have to dodge the cadre. Like if he catches you, then you lose points.
Okay.
And you have to like recruit bystanders, do all this stuff, upload a bunch of stuff to Instagram. It was not my Instagram, and the Instagram that it was posted to was from my teammate was a private one, so like you can't unfortunately see all the stupid videos of the ridiculous things that we were doing at that time. So we had to do things like stop a random person and tell them all about what Go Ruck is. We had to recruit them to do some physical exercises with us. We had to recruit a bunch of people to take a big group picture. We had to have somebody at the downtown aquarium, like we had to flop around next to the fountain pretending we were fish out of water, and somebody had to pretend to be a fisherman to catch us, and then we had to take a picture of that.
Okay.
All different kinds of things like that. We had to sing our own rendition of Take Me Out to the Ball Game at Minute Maid Park, and so on. So, I mean, it was a bunch of different things. But my team won, like, by a landslide. We just, like, kicked butt, and... So that was cool. And we rucked a total of about 8 miles, did a lot of PT, the physical training stuff in between. That's how we got a lot of our points, because one of the stipulations was every 5 blocks you go, do X amount of, you know, some exercise and then upload the video and then, you know, tag it and everything. And every single time you do that, you get more points. Apparently, none of the other teams were doing it quite as often. Like, we were remembering to do it. Hmm. And then we ended up with, like, a 30-point lead on everybody else. Okay. So,
yeah, I saw you say something like, "Oh, I got first." I didn't realize it was like a team.
Oh yeah, it was a team scavenger hunt. Uh-huh, it was a scavenger hunt, and I figured that I would have a team of random people because the people that I was originally going to go with ended up not being able to go. But it turns out that Kendall and Melissa, who were my teammates for my first Spartan races during the year when I was doing the basic Spartan trifecta, they showed up and we teamed up together along with some random person that I didn't know, just because he didn't have anybody else, and everybody else was like a family or, you know, a bunch of people who just did the light the day before or something.
Yeah.
So that was cool. It was my first time doing the Go Ruck scavenger event, and it was a lot of fun. So mild amounts of physical training stuff, but mostly it's just about going out there, looking around the city and having a good time. So also in my training, I've officially used every last weight plate that I own in my workout this morning.
Oh, yeah? So,
now I need to get more weight plates because I probably could have done more weight than I had, but I ran out of weight plates.
Mm.
So since I'm on the last week of my current cycle, and the next cycle that I'm going to be doing is a bulk, which is about building muscle, I'm going to need more weight plates. So, yeah, and as a result of all this stuff that I've been doing, I've been getting a lot of questions and comments about whether I'm going to be a bodybuilding competitor. Given that I've got like the work ethic and the discipline for it, and apparently also genetics for it, just because like of where my muscle insertions are and the balance of what my muscles look like and everything, like with my ab muscles, for example, some people's abs naturally are a little lopsided. So even if you can shave down to where you can see your ab muscles, your abs might be just lopsided. And no matter what you do to train them, they're formed the way that they're formed, but mine are not, they're even. So very symmetrical.
Do you have the pharmacy to be a bodybuilder?
Pharmacy, right? Yeah. So, but anyway, the thing about it, though, is that I would never do a straight up bodybuilding competition with, like, you know, 0% body fat, basically, and the fake tans and crap, because I think it's personally that it's very ugly, even if it's impressive. And it's also not healthy because those folks basically very frequently pass out off stage because of lack of food and water by the time they get there. And also I'd have to get fake boobs, which I don't care for in the first place. And then when you have no body fat, it looks like a fake boob packet is shrink wrapped to your rib cage.
it's really
gross. Like, it's not appealing looking. So, yeah, as for like a figure competition, which is you've got a little bit more fat and some curves and stuff, but you've also got muscle, like in a aesthetic bikini type class, like I don't know if the whole boob job thing is a requisite there or not, but if so, it's never going to happen. And if not, then I might entertain the idea sometime. I'm just too damn busy right now. So, you know, whatever. So there you go. Wouldn't that be a trip?
If you think about it, Dr. Frankenstein's a bodybuilder.
Cuttlefish.
So that's my life.
Cool. Congratulations to you and your team.
We were the space unicorns.
Of course you were.
Why not?
Oh, Ben, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I had friends in town last weekend, and I finished up a 3-year-long D&D campaign.
Holy cow.
Was pretty exciting. Yeah.
So how do you finish up? Does that mean, like, all the players died, or?
No, we just, you know, it's like The Hobbit. You know, like, there's a lot of small endings, but everyone kind of gets their own, like, wrap-up, and it's like, and this person went off and did this thing. Hmm. And then after that's happened to everyone just kind of looks around at one another and goes, okay, I guess it's over now.
And all of our heroes retired.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was a good time. I got to show some people around the city, so that was a lot of fun. And I found a Belgian bar that's like a block away that's super cool and pretty divey. So, yeah.
I'm having trouble imagining a Belgian dive, but that's mostly because of a lack of imagination and an abundance of stereotypes about Belgium. Mostly,
Just
like,
that they love waffles.
and most of them are Jean-Claude Van Damme. No, I'm like, mostly if I've had a Belgian beer, I'm like, it's good. I cannot imagine. I cannot reconcile those two ideas.
I just know they didn't have a government for about a year.
Well, yeah.
Yep. Nobody knew.
Oh, how about you, David?
Not too much, one way or the other. Just kind of keeping on.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Happy post Cinco de Mayo.
Oh, yeah. No, I got a small bottle of pre-mixed margarita, 'cause that sounded a margarita sounded good. But a pre-made margarita is not necessarily good.
Yeah, pre-made margarita is not the best. I mean, like,
No.
obviously I live in Texas, so margaritas are like a thing. So,
Yeah. I like my margaritas really tart is the thing. Yeah. Mostly like any of the sweetness needs to come from the triple sec, not necessarily from any syrup, which is what you get.
You could have added the mints that got bitter to it.
Yeah. We were talking
That's
about gardening
right.
before. Oh, those are compost now. Those plants are long dead. Yeah.
I'm so sad that you killed your plant just because it's bitter and hateful.
No.
What's next, Cole? The podcast?
Me?
To be fair, the podcast is very bitter and hateful.
Well, depending on what game we're talking about, maybe.
those are the words that come up most often in conversation. Yeah. Oh man, describing us. No, this was several years ago, and I moved away from that
Oh,
place
okay.
anyway. Yeah.
Because like I've got this mint plant outside that I thought has died about three or four times because it's freezed, it's frozen over for like one day, and then when it freezes over, the mint plant dies, and then it's like completely gone. It's all dead, and then in the spring, it just comes back from somewhere, and I don't know where. It's like a zombie plant that will never die. And so the thing is that it doesn't spring up in the same place. So it is like in a big bed that's like about 3 or 4 feet long,
Ooh.
and it just comes up somewhere else. And I'm like, where is it coming from? It's never flowered and therefore, grown seeds to put more seeds in the ground. So I don't know what's happening. I guess it's like mushrooms where like the roots go real deep and they just never die.
Yeah, just laying it's laying dormant. That is not dead. Yeah. No, I would like to eventually start doing some gardening, but I need to get my lawn in order
Lawn
for you.
turf, yeah.
Yeah. I've got no drainage here. There's no root system. Like when I walk out to my shed, which is my backyard, like you can see where I walked the previous day.
Oh, yeah.
It's real bad. I am further transforming into a boring suburban person. I got a bunch of power tools. Because there was a good deal on power tools, so I have like a miter saw and a sawzall and a buzz saw.
Oh, that's
Yeah.
awesome.
Yeah. So when I'm looking for another deer, a deal on a belt sander and an orbital sander, and that's
Nice.
uh, yeah.
What are you looking to make?
I'm looking to refinish one of my guitars that I've got here at the start, and I just want to start doing some minor stuff. But
Cool.
no, I got my I got I built a fire pit re here this past week. And
Yay, sweet.
I put up some benches and shelves in my garage. Yeah, it's all
Yay.
good. Beautiful day out today. If I wasn't recording tonight, I would have built a fire because I have a lot of sticks to burn.
Yay. Oh,
Yeah.
well, you do it another day. It's fine.
Yep. It is fine. I did not say that. I would rather be nowhere else except for maybe in bed right now. But if I cannot be in bed.
Bed is appealing. Now, if only you could podcast from bed, that would be the best.
It would be it you
That's
don't
dangerous.
you can get good. Well, I would fall asleep while I
Yeah,
was talking.
I know. But then that would be kind of entertaining too. I'd have fun.
I'd enjoy it. Oh man. So yeah, that's what's going on. Well, we've got the usual kind of show for you, usual as of last week. We're going to start out.
I win. Everything changed.
Most of that introducing randomness was to soften the ground. for the shift. So we're going to get started with the grind. We're going to do the multiplayer and then finish out with the end boss, things that we are excited about. And why don't we get started with
the grind.
What have you all been grinding on in the RPG style fashion? Jala, you've been away for the longest, so I'll throw it to you.
All right, so I've got a couple of things for you. First thing that I am playing is The Company, which is something I mentioned before, an iOS puzzle game with interesting use of the phone itself and in some cases AR as part of the puzzle solving experience. And back when I played it the first time, like it was basically one half of the game had been released. And then there was a whole second set of puzzles that was going to be added at some point in the future for free. And the time is now, guys. And thanks, shout out to Z Chocobo or Eric C for letting me know that update was out. So I played through a handful of the new puzzles, and they're not repeats of anything that I can remember doing from the first section. So it's challenging but fun, and I'm looking forward to playing more of it. These are, because they are challenging, it's not just like, oh yeah, I'm just going to breeze through five levels on this. No, like sometimes you get stumped on one level for like days. So, you know, and then like you finally pick it up and you're like, oh, I get it now, you know, and it clicks and then you move forward. And I like that, because after a while, when a puzzle game becomes rote and it's just like, you know, something that you're doing mechanically without any real excitement about it,
becomes
that's
a chore.
Yeah, it's a chore. It's not interesting anymore. It's kind of like a grinding, level grinding, you know, like I don't like to do that either. So, so I've been playing that, enjoying it. Don't really have anything else to say. I mean, it continues to be consistent with what my experiences were before. I talked about that game last year. I don't remember when. So, like, go on the website and just search The Company and see, you know, when I talked about it last, if you seem interested in, like, a puzzle game which uses different aspects of your phone and manipulating the phone itself as a physical object in the world as part of your puzzle. Mm-hmm. So, very cool.
Do the puzzles pick up in difficulty with where the last puzzle of the first half ended, or is it all kind of a reset?
Well, here's the thing about that. Like, I don't really know how to say that, because depending upon what how you pick up things, how you process things, some of the early puzzles in the first part might have been very difficult for you, and the later ones might have been easier. I mean, like, everybody would come to this because there's such variety in the way that these puzzles play out that I don't necessarily know that there's a ramp up, if that makes any sense. Like, there's just, it's kind of like a mishmash of a bunch of different concepts for ways to make puzzles using your phone as a thing in the world.
Yeah.
You know, to manipulate that, you know, it's kind of hard to guess how everybody's going to come to that and what's going to be challenging, you know, to what's inside somebody's mind box and what's not, you know, like I don't know the answer to that question. So I can't really say that it's more or less challenging. It just feels very consistent with the experiences that I had previously. I've only played a few puzzles, so I don't know if it has any repeating sections. Like the first half of the game had some sections where it was like the same type of puzzle would show up every 5 or 10 levels or something, and then like you would have to solve this one puzzle that was similar to one that you did before, and it would be like 5 puzzles out of however 50 or however many there were, that would have the same mechanic to it that would just pop up every once in a while. And actually I found that to be pretty annoying because everything else was varied except this one puzzle. I don't know if there's that kind of a situation here because I've only played a few. So I will know more in time as to whether or not that, you know, is a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, like challenge, I don't know how to answer that.
Yeah, it finds your weakness.
Yeah. It'll find your weakness sooner or later in the various forms of puzzles that there are. It can be very challenging sometimes, and you might be on like level 5 and be like, I can't pass this level. I don't know what to do. And just set it down, come back to it and mess with it every once in a while. And, you know, but leave it alone for a while and you will probably come up with the answer just not focusing so much on it. You know, what I found, at least in my experiences when I played it the first time.
Or maybe setting your phone down is the solution to the puzzle.
Yeah, right.
You never know.
Well, there were
the only way to win is not to play.
Well, there were parts where it was like you have to manipulate your controls on your phone, like from your control screen on the iOS, mm-hmm. or you would have to literally physically plug the phone in or something. Yeah. So, like, there were. You know, and then at one point, you know, you actually had to physically get up and move around with the phone and it would register, you know, your movement with the phone in your hand. So, I mean, like there were different things like that where, yeah, like it could very well be a situation where, you know, setting the phone down, you know, maybe the you know, accelerometer would read that. It could be.
I think I remember this. And then you have to plug into the second controller port so it can't read your mind, right?
Right. So, yeah, but it's really fun because it is unique, but because it's unique like this, like I would not say that I will remember any of the puzzles from the first half. I think it does have replayability after a certain cooldown period, but, you know, it's really novel, but it's very limited because it can only be on iOS because it was made for iPhones. So mm-hmm. like it can't be on an Android and it won't be on Steam. And if you don't have an iPhone, you will never have that experience, you know? So, but anyway, I'm still enjoying it either way. So that's the first thing I've been playing.
Nice.
Any questions about that so far?
No. I remember how excited you were when those levels dropped.
Yeah, I was pretty thrilled. So, all right. The other thing I've been playing, and this is something that some of the listeners have been really excited to like waiting for me to play.
I'll be
Zero
back.
Time Dilemma.
Oh, okay. Ooh.
Zero Time Dilemma. So, yeah, I have played 22 hours so far, and I still have a little ways to go, but I'm pretty far in the game with just very little locked content left. I want to say I have maybe 20% or less left to do in this game. Like, I'm pretty far along. So people, like, okay, when I've been playing this, everybody was anticipating on Twitter, like when I first started up, because I hated the opening. I hated it completely. The opening sequence was atrocious. I will get mad at it in a minute, but I was live tweeting my responses to it and everybody was very excited to see my live tweets about my complaints. They were just looking forward to what I was going to complain about throughout this game. Yeah. And then like after the opening part, I complained a little bit. And then I haven't really been tweeting much. And the reason why is because it hasn't actually, after that first part, which I'll complain about in a minute. After that, I have not hated it. So,
yeah.
So the opening sequence, the animation of this game is atrocious. I don't care what you say. It is atrocious.
Is it worse than Virtue's Last Reward? So this is the third entry in 9 hours, 9 persons, 9 doors, Virtue's Last Reward.
It is worse. It is like early CG level. Like the characters are just like floating without actually moving, or like their little sprite things are like vibrating around because like their character model is like bouncing a little bit. It's like terrible. Crappy animation. And then, okay. Not only that, but the dialogue was terrible, like redundant and terrible and slow and sloggy. And just like, it reminded me of VLR so much. And it made me so mad that I was mad for about 20 minutes when the game started. And, my first decision in the game though, got everybody released into the wild. So my first playthrough technically lasted 10 minutes.
Yep.
And I considered that to be my canon ending. That was my first ending, and that is my canon right there. Yeah. I won.
They get out, but nobody.
The game now.
Nobody has any idea what happens.
Yeah, right. I mean, like that. It's kind of like when Gary was doing, you know, choose your illusion, you know, mm-hmm. like, and he was for a while he was doing a live stream where he was reading a choose your own adventure book, and once he got to an ending, that was it. He put the book down and moved on to a different book. And whatever that ending was, sometimes it was really short, and sometimes he got, you know, into it for a while before he died or whatever happened. So, like, that was kind of like my concept of this. When I got 10 minutes in, I'm like, well, I can turn it off and close it now. I finished it. But no, I went back in. So I've been mostly dark on it, like I said, because it actually hasn't been bothering me nearly as much as Danganronpa 2 bothered me.
Okay.
Danganronpa 2 made me a lot angrier than this game did. And the part of the reason for that is because this game has some ease of use concessions that make it a lot more tolerable. And you had told me about these, Cole, when I finished playing DLR. When I finished Virtue's Last Reward, and when you had played Zero Time Dilemma, you told me that it had all these concessions and all this other stuff. And I think also when I was playing Steins Gate and I was getting mad at that, because I was frustrated having to go back through and trying to figure out what I missed, with the phone calls or whatever was going on with that.
Yeah.
And, I was getting frustrated with that. And then you were telling me, well, actually Zero Time Dilemma has these concessions. And I'm like, shut up, Cole.
Did you have to throw in there?
Yeah. Okay. Yes, I did. Okay. Because you probably did well, actually. Yeah, the thing is, though, the ease of use. So you can jump back to the decision points directly, instead of having to rewatch all of the sequences that come up to that point. So you don't actually have to go through and watch everything over again. And I like that. Also, you can fast forward to the point where you make your decision rather than having to rewatch all the scenes at that node or whatever on your flow chart.
Mm-hmm.
So those things were big pet peeves of mine in VLR, and those were completely ameliorated in this game. And there is also not a required choose who to betray points to the frequency of, you know, Virtue's Last Reward. You do have a couple of those, but there's actually a way out kind of third option available for some of that also. Mm-hmm. So it's not in your face where it's like, and now you have to kill somebody else. And now you have to kill somebody else. Who are you going to pick? It's not like that every turn, twist and turn in this game. So
this is similar to the previous games where you play as a group of 9 people who are kind of trapped by a mysterious person who is forcing them into a kind of decision game.
I didn't describe all of that because we've talked about it.
It's been a while.
It's been a while. Continue. Go ahead and finish describing this. You are best at it.
No. I just wanted to make sure people were not completely unmoored with that. It follows on. Has a different structure. Like the scenes are more atomized and out of sequence.
Yes, they are. And that actually made me mad at first, too, because I understand the purpose. OK, so basically in this game, there are 3 teams of 3 people each, so 9 total. And they are split up and they have to make different decisions, as was previously mentioned. They are basically in a bomb shelter somewhere, and they have to solve room escape puzzles. And then they also, again, have to make some decisions along the way that are really crucial for one reason or another. And so I like the room escape parts. I like room escapes in general, so I like that play with no problem. That's a continuing feature of all of these. I've liked that aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the narrative parts, like, okay, I played 9 Hours, 9 Persons, 9 Doors, the first installment of this trilogy on iOS, and it was a very pared down version, which did not have the room escape sections. It just basically had the decision points, but it didn't bother me in that particular case, I guess because of the way that they presented it. And I don't know how accurate it is to what the original game was like. Like, I don't know if they cut stuff out or what, or if it was just the narrative flow that you were going through on that one. But I really enjoyed that one for the most part. I did not really dislike any of the characters to any great degree. I actually liked several of the characters quite a bit in the first game. Then in Virtue's Last Reward, the second installment, I just had like the most visceral hate for that game. Like I had liked Danganronpa, the first Danganronpa, through pretty well. I mean, I had some problems with it, but I was really enjoying it, played it really, really quickly until the end when I got very, very mad at it. And right after I played Danganronpa, I played Virtue's Last Reward and I got even more angry. It's and then much. I stopped playing. I was too much. And then I stopped playing anything that resembled a visual novel for a very long time. but in Virtue's Last Reward, it did not have the concessions to the flow. Like you had to watch everything, go through everything again, you know, down this whole long series of screens and narratives and whatever. And then you had to, like, every single decision you had to make seemed to pretty much be, who are you going to betray next? You know, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. And it just made me mad. And then I also didn't like very many of the characters in that game. So I just did not enjoy that experience at all. And I actually ended up with Zero Time Dilemma. I forget who, but a listener had given it to me. And I was interested in playing it basically based on, you know, your statement about the concessions to the gameplay and everything cool.
Yep.
So now, insofar as the characters, because this is always very important to me when you've got anything that's narrative focused, how do I like the characters? It's actually evenly split between who I absolutely cannot stand, who I am neutral on, and who is okay. Like, I don't love anybody. But I hate with a great passion Junpei, Mira, and Eric. Yeah. I tolerate Q, Diana, and Sigma. They're okay. Like they're not, you know, I don't have a problem with them. Phi, Akane, and Carlos. So right. Sigma was the main character in Virtue's Last Reward. And I could not stand him at all in that game, but they toned him down in this game. And he's a lot more, he's shown as being a lot more responsible of a character and more level headed here than he was in the other game. Like they basically turned him into kind of like a super lech is what he just came across as in Virtue's Last Reward, and I was not down with that representation. Yeah. And he's a lot better in this game. So, unless it pulls a Danganronpa like the first Danganronpa, where I get super mad at it at the end of the game, I am guessing that when I finish this game, it's going to be in the same category as Danganronpa 2, which, if you remember, is on the side of liking it, but still closer to being neutral. It's like, I like it all right. It's not bad, but it's not like I'm super excited that it exists in the world. You know, like, it's all right. I mean, I'm playing through it. I'm enjoying the puzzle parts.
Yeah.
I still want to know. Hopefully they describe enough stuff that I understand what the connective tissue is between all of these different games, because every time I play one of these games, I don't know what's going on and I never do really figure out what's going on with the game. I don't know if this game will actually clear stuff up or what. And is this the final installment or is there supposed to be another one coming down the pipes sometime?
It's unclear.
Oh, okay. Great. What did you feel about the resolution of the story by the end, Cole, so I can prepare myself one way or the other?
It left me wanting more.
Okay.
So what's your conclusion, though? Because usually these have been games that, you know, Cole has enjoyed and you have flipped tables. So if it left him wanting more, does that mean you're likely not to like it?
It could be. It could be. That's his statement. It could go either way.
Leaving you wanting more, I intentionally phrased that to be value neutral.
Yeah. Yeah. What I basically read that as is there's not necessarily 100% resolution to everything that's going on, per se. Like they don't answer all the questions, even though they are so laborious throughout the game to explain everything in great detail. No. Tedious detail, I will say. Mm-hmm. It does not seem as slow about that as it was in Virtue's Last Reward either, I will say. Like the flow of it seems to be a little bit better.
Yeah.
It is still pedantic and it gets into nitty gritty stuff about random, you know, random pseudoscience or whatever, with an alarming frequency, but
alarming. Sorry, that's a very funny way to phrase it.
See, right. I feel like it's a shame they didn't, I don't know, actually get into, you know, real philosophy or something like that, where, you know, then at least if you're listening to their nonsense, you might be learning something.
Well, and see, that's what I liked about Steins Gate, is that Steins Gate gets really into the technical, why does this timey-wimey stuff work? And I mean, like, I feel like it has more of a basis in stuff that things that, you know, people have actually studied. Like, some of the things they mentioned are things that I had studied about myself when I was looking into, you know, string theory and all different kinds of other things, you know? So, like, Steins Gate seemed to be more science-based. This seems to be more like, I don't know how to describe it exactly.
I mean, it's pseudo-profound. Like, so to pull an example, an important aspect of the first game is the presence of Ice Nine, which is a creation of Kurt Vonnegut in the novel Cat's Cradle, which, like, even in that, you know, it was kind of hand wavy science fiction type stuff that was kind of half explained and worked just enough to be a driver for that story. Here, it's a very similar kind of idea. It's a bunch of that, not necessarily where it's pulled in from, you know, directly from other sources like that, or plagiarized from other sources like that. It is very, like, let's say metaphysical a little bit, maybe.
Yeah, metaphysical is a good way to put it. Like, they get into psychic stuff a lot.
Yeah.
And different things like that. So it's not, you know, like, Steins Gate will go into, you know, quantum theory and things like that, whereas this one goes into, like, psychic stuff, it's what, like, people think about that. And it kind of cryptid-ish in a way. I mean, not exactly. There's not, like, monsters per se, but, like, it feels kind of like that. That kind of a vibe.
Are you familiar with the 100th monkey theory, David?
I'm not.
No. What's that?
Okay. So it would land better if it was something that you had heard about, but, like, I forget which game it is, but, like, they talk about, oh, they did some experiment where they had two populations of monkeys that were isolated from each other.
Oh, yeah, I remember this.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And they taught 99 monkeys how to do this one particular thing on one island, and no other monkey on the other island knew how to do this. When they taught the 100th monkey, all of a sudden, without any contact between the two of them, all of the monkeys, all 200, were doing this thing that they taught. So the idea that, like, once a particular idea reaches a threshold in a population, it is transferred over some kind of field. It's a bunch of stuff like that, which,
yeah.
You kind of have to be an enthusiast of bullshit, which in some cases I am, you know, like, if it's in the service of fiction, it's fine. But that's the kind of stuff that it traffics in.
Yeah. See, I think that would be the problem I would have, is just, like, I like sci-fi, but not nonsense.
Yeah.
You know, so, like, you know, if they can provide some sort of, you know, semi-plausible, you know, explanation for it, that's one thing, but just saying, like, oh, psychic monkeys or whatever.
Yeah.
Well, they do sometimes go into neurology and, you know, stuff like that, like the brain science, and they do talk about some things like the, I forget it, what they're called. When the corpus callosum is cut between the two hemispheres of the brain, and then you've got the hand that, you know, will try to kill you, and then the other hand has to try to prevent it from killing you, that kind of a thing.
You've got the one side of your brain that sees the chicken, and the other side doesn't know that you saw a chicken, but the hand that it controls will draw a chicken just because the brain is super weird. Like, it gets into some,
some actual neuroscience.
Some, like, Oliver Sacks type stuff would be what I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. That's better.
That's
yeah.
The, Yeah, and that's stuff that actually does have studies behind it, but then it kind of also, you know, teeters off into this kind of thriller, you know, metaphysical stuff too.
So if Metal Gear Solid has nanomachines or parasites, this has the morphogenetic field.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. Yeah. So I know that from a another game that I like a great deal.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, in either case, this game is not
that you just played.
Well, this game is not the like a trash fire or anything. It is fine. After I got past the initial part of it, I calmed down and I've been okay with it. I can't say that I'm like I'm playing it because I like the room escape parts and also because some of the characters that, you know, I like all right. I do want to see what happens to them. And I still like I wanted to play this game because I wanted to see if I could figure out what the hell the overarching story was. So
there are some endings that you're going to get that are going to pay
make
off.
Make me mad.
Some of them are going to make you mad. Taken as read, I believe. Yeah. How about this? In a value neutral way, there were some of the endings that I got that landed really, really hard as somebody who has enjoyed the previous entries in this.
Okay. So I've already had several interesting endings that have been quite something, including like a certain individual turning into, well, actually several individuals turning into crazy murderers and yep. things like that out of the blue, including a particular character whom you would never think would do the thing and just loses yes. their mind.
That's pro forma for the series.
Yeah, and so I'm like, okay, well, that sure was a thing that happened that I wasn't anticipating. All right, you know.
So
and
are all? Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
So are all of the timelines canon in that, like, for example, there'd never be a scenario where that would happen just because, like, hey, in this timeline, this character is just completely different because we felt like it?
That is a very difficult question to answer with this series.
Okay, fair enough.
Well, the whole emphasis of this series is kind of like Steins Gate in that it's got like, okay, there's different, you know, this is the timeline that we're living in right now. And then this timeline somehow influences the current timeline because of XYZ thing, you know, mm-hmm. like that gets explained tediously for 20 minutes, that kind of a thing. And so what I've discovered through playing this game is that Cole, you are really into this timey-wimey stuff a lot. Like you really like it.
I mean, kind of, yeah, probably.
It seems like you do, because, like, you've liked several games. And it's not like I'm knocking that, because, like, I've been interested enough in this series. It hasn't landed the same way for me, mm-hmm. but I've been interested enough in it to play more of it. And I do like the gameplay aspects. I wish this would carry over to more games, like the gameplay mechanic stuff that they've added, the yeah. ease of use things in this mm-hmm. game. I really wish could be in other games. So even if you didn't really like Virtue's Last Reward, if you have any interest in what the actual storyline is, I would say that this game would be a decent enough game to play. Like you might not even have a problem, listener, with the beginning of the game, but I sure did for about 20 minutes. And then I got over it. And then I've been fine. Yeah. I've been fine ever since. So I do want to see what happens. I want to see what the resolution is. And that is why I am continuing to play. Kind cool. of like that is my thing. I just if I get enough into some aspect of the narrative, even if it's just one thing in the narrative, I really do want to see it to the end. I mean, that's why I played the trash fire called Corpse Party Blood Drive is because I wanted to see the end of the series, you know. Yeah. And then they came out with more games. What am I gonna do? Mm-hmm. But anyway, that's all I got. That's it.
Cool. I learned two things just while I wanted to double check and make sure who was involved and what they were involved in. The director of that series, Kotaro Uchikoshi. I learned by looking at his Wikipedia that not only did he was he a scenario writer for a Steins Gate sequel that recently came out here in America, but also he was a 3D modeler on the classic PlayStation game Pepsi Man.
Well, that sure is some shit. Okay. Well, All right, the connections, the Kevin Bacon game.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm a Sphinx in a value-neutral way. You sure are continuing to play that video game, Jala.
I sure am playing that game a while, aren't I? I'll let you know when I'm done with it.
Oh, yeah, I'll probably hear it from Ohio.
Yeah, you might one way or the other. Maybe. I don't know.
Oh, let's see. Ben, how about you?
I do not have much this week because I spent 3 of the 4 days playing D&D. I continued to play Oxenfree a little bit more. So I'm approaching the end game of that game. It's still interesting, I guess. I don't know. If it has like a really good ending, then it'll probably be promoted to like a good game. But as it stands, it's probably like an okay game. So yeah.
What is acting as a drag on it? Is it the dialogue? Is it the story? Like, what's?
There's not much to do outside of the dialogue system of the game, right? So it's like, so if you're into the narrative, then you're probably into it, I guess. But like, the most interesting mechanics in the game, they kind of reuse a couple times where they probably shouldn't. It would probably be better if they were bespoke, without spoiling what those mechanics are, I guess. So I think that was like one grievance that I had with the game, but I mean, other than that, it's a pretty, you know, functional game. Like there's not many black eyes on it or anything like mechanically. Yeah. Yeah.
What else? Go ahead, Jolly. You sound like you had a question.
No, I had just seen a very tiny smidge of that game played by somebody, like a friend of mine on a stream once upon a time. Conrad, if he's listening. But anyway, yeah, that's the only experience I've had with Oxenfree is watching somebody else play it. And I don't know. He was really enthused about it and recommended it to me, but I don't know. I don't know how, if I would like that or not. And is it on Switch? Like, if it's not on Switch, I don't know if I play it.
I have no idea.
So
I'm not sure. Yeah. It's one of those things where I just default to saying, yeah, everything's on Switch. But I actually think that that's probably not on Switch. I haven't heard about it.
It looks like it's on iOS. It's on Switch. Yeah. It's on PlayStation 4 and Xbox and Android and Windows and Linux and Mac. It's on everything.
Indie gaming rules now.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like it's more like the Switch rules, but yeah.
Well, the Switch right. Does indeed rule, but it just like that, like this little game that, you know, presumably didn't have an awful lot of a team or budget on it is just available. Like you listed everything there. Sorry. I'm just kind of gushing about how good it is to just have all of this available with minimal hassle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, gushing over.
yeah, outside of Oxenfree, I haven't really played too much. So
okay.
I do have a new game, but I just haven't had time to play it yet. So I'll probably try and do that sometime this week.
Any sneak previews or?
I haven't started it yet. So no.
Okay. you don't want to commit yourself to it. I understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. David, how about you?
So I have not been doing a great deal. I did jump on to some zombie slaying games in what is even the name of that game, Jala?
That is Sniper Elite Zombie Army Trilogy.
Right. So yeah. Jala and Phil and I
not Phil, Greg.
Gosh damn it. I have not slept in like a week.
Oh, geez.
Jala and Greg and I jumped on and did we make it just through the first level?
We made it through just the first level because we had that accidental wipe at that one part with, you know, the multiple bosses and whatever. But then we kicked butt after that.
Yeah. So we quickly kind of fell into our roles where Jala was the demolitionist. I generally just ran around shooting things, and Greg was basically the adult making sure that we actually did anything remotely towards what we were supposed to be doing.
And also would be like the backup for whatever areas needed it or whatever. So
right,
he, you know,
exactly.
He was just kind of like all over the place. I'd be over on one side blowing dudes up. You were on the other side headshotting people. He'd be headshotting people or helping people up or whatever was going on, whatever needed to happen. So
exactly.
Yep. So. And that game, we haven't talked about that game in a while, but that game is difficult. It is for 4 players. It's kind of Left 4 Dead style, but, it's harder than that. And so we have the difficulty set on Cadet, and we have it set down. We had it to where the enemy level was for as if there were 2 players, and we were still struggling with parts of it.
Oh,
because
wow.
It is hard. It is hard. And, like, even with a full team and set like that, you know, set down by one, you know, like if we had 4 people, then we would set it down to enemies for 3 people, that kind of a thing. I have not beaten the entire set of maps yet with anybody because it's just hard. So, yeah.
So I was looking it up, and I think we should consider like putting it to the highest difficulty, because apparently the difficulty solely affects the bullet physics. It doesn't actually affect the difficulty.
Hmm.
Okay. Well,
so I guess
all right.
it's
well,
like. I guess it's like Cadet is no bullet drop, no wind. Whatever the medium one is, bullet drop but no wind, and then Sniper Elite has bullet drop and wind.
Hmm. Okay. Well.
And it appeared at least that that's the only difference. And then, you know, like you said, other than that, it's just how many zombies.
Yeah. Okay, well, we can experiment and see what happens and how badly we die the next time we try. But yeah, like the levels are long too. They're not like the shortness of a Left 4 Dead level. So,
right.
You know, like it doesn't have the same cadence to it, the same pacing that a Left 4 Dead does, because Left 4 Dead is kind of like fast, 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 fast all the time. And this has like parts where it's a little bit slower and then it speeds up and things like that. And there's lots and lots of just waves of enemies and boss characters that come. So,
Right.
But it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun for sure. So,
yeah. And I did enjoy, Greg's either a big history buff or plays a lot of World War II games, because
Greg.
He has a dang near encyclopedic knowledge of the various weapons we're running into.
He's a historian. That would be why.
Oh, okay. I guess I did not realize that. Okay, so that totally makes sense. So ironically enough, even in the zombified version of World War II, having a historian along for the game makes it much more interesting and educational.
Hmm.
Right?
Nice.
I really enjoy them. I'm looking forward to going the rest of the way through. It does kind of entertain me how all of the German characters, it has like their bios are basically why this person is technically not a Nazi.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
You got to play it fast and loose.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and what this also tells me is that you also need to get Sniper Elite 4 and play it with me, because I was playing that with Sam, and then, like, you know, Sam has been busy or whichever, and I just have never gotten back to that game. Like, we were co-oping it, and I got through, like, 3 or 4 levels with him. I don't remember. And then I haven't gotten to finish that game yet. So I'm waiting.
At the
Wait
very,
for a sale,
yeah.
David. Get it on a sale.
That looks like a lot of fun. I really,
yeah.
In semi-related, I really want to get, apparently they still make the pistol you use in that game.
Ah,
that
cool.
With it's like the world's quietest concealed suppressed pistol, I guess. It's is the report or whatever is about as loud as an average car engine. So it was like maybe the first suppressed pistol ever made, actually. But yeah, really neat design. But yeah, that looks like a pretty cool game.
Hopefully Greg is not like banging his hands on the steering wheel going, "No, you're wrong. Let me tell you the actual thing." I guess
It's
we'll find out.
as loud as a truck engine, you fool.
Yeah. So, what else, David? Is that it?
So continuing the theme of historical maybe, I've continued on with Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
Oh, cool.
I made it. I don't know how you define like quote unquote acts in this game. I'm gonna say I made it through the first act in that I made it to the first point that it takes you out of the Animus to be back in the real world for a while.
Okay.
So, which that's been kind of interesting. I've been playing. I'm playing as a woman this time around instead of oh, what's his name? Generic dude,
You're definitely playing as Desmond. Yeah.
Desmond or
D
something.
Desmond's been gone for a while.
Has he?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I picked that up a little bit because you basically the first thing is kind of the first time they pull you out, all you can really do is go look around and inspect things in your hideout, and it's all like call outs to the recent games in the series. So there's clearly something that's going on, but I have no idea. Like the modern day version of that story time or story has really left me behind at some point. But in terms of the game itself, the actual story is definitely getting a lot more interesting. Although the gameplay itself is still, I'd say, kind of a weak point. And they've in particular, they've almost completely removed the parkour element, which is a little bit too bad. But on the plus side, I've met Herodotus, and he seems pretty cool.
Herodotus, confirmed cool guy.
Yeah, he's historically confirmed cool guy. Without him, we wouldn't have Greg. So,
Cool.
why not?
Any other notable figures?
I think he's the only living historical figure I've come across so far. I mean, your character is apparently a descendant of Leonidas, but although overall, just the Spartans are really kind of dicks in this, like just all the way around, they're just not particularly compelling, compelling people.
No. Oh, well.
Yay.
But yeah, other than that, I guess one other thing that does kind of bother me is that you can basically the first act is you basically journeying from one side to the other of wherever the main island of Greece is.
Okay.
And once you get to the other side, your ship's there waiting for you, despite the fact that there is no realistic way it could have gotten there other than just like circumnavigating the entire country. So that's a little odd, but
It's like jiggle physics, but for boats.
Jiggle physics?
Jiggle boats. Oh, yeah. Cool.
So yeah, I think it's going to end up being, and forgive me if I used this analogy in the past, but I would compare it very much to the current, James Bond films, in that they're really good movies. They're just not James Bond movies.
Right, right.
And so I think this is a pretty good game. It's just has nothing at all to do with Assassin's Creed.
Had you played the previous ones? I forget if you have any history with the series.
I played the first one, and then I think the 2 and then Brother or Unity, or whichever was the really good one of the trilogy they did.
Yeah, Brotherhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. Well, at least it's a good game. even if it is not strictly Assassin's Creed as it was established.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Isn't there a llama in that game somewhere or something random like that? That you wouldn't even think would even be there because it doesn't make sense to be there, but it's there anyway. There's some kind of a fuzzy creature that I remember when Allison was playing it, she was posting about it, and she got some achievo or something for I don't know, going and petting some other one of the same creature, and the betrayal, kind of like if you have a dog and then you pet somebody else's dog and come home smelling like that dog.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Even stepping
so
out.
I don't remember
if it was a llama, but it was some kind of weird fuzzy creature that I have a predilection for liking, and I like llamas, so I keep thinking it's a llama, but I don't know how that makes sense. I don't know.
So far, I have seen a great deal of goats, bunch of deer, many very irate wolves, some boars, some other things. I keep trying to ram the whales with my ship, but I can't tell if it actually is possible to take a whale down or not.
Why would they tempt you if it was impossible?
I don't know. I'm going to be severely disappointed if did the previous games ever get into like sea monsters or anything?
I don't know. Ben, you played Black Flag. Yeah.
I don't think there's any sea monsters in it outside of ghost ships, maybe.
Okay, because I mean, this time around, like, they're definitely, the Greek myths are apparently actually a thing. So if I don't get to fight some, like, I don't know, krakens and
Scylla and Charybdis or something.
Yeah, exactly. On the plus side, like, those actually have historical places where they're located, so I can at the very least confirm whether or not I can fight them.
And Sea of Scylla is just some bullshit, like a whirlpool or something.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. Reality is so disappointing. Cool. Is that all, David?
That is it.
Cool. I have not been doing an awful lot. I think I'm done with Satisfactory for a little while. I blew through all the new content that they put out in the new patch. So the, the quartz tech tree and stuff like that. I want to get a little bit more. I feel like if I refactor my factory right now, I'm going to have to do a bunch of that work again. So I might just disengage from it for a while until I can be comfortable that things are not going to change under me. I am not parting with the game out of any kind of disgust. I would still recommend, even though it's in early access, it is still a tremendous amount of fun to play if you're into that kind of like optimization and, world exploration stuff. It's good. What's that, Ben?
I was going to say, you like caught up to the game treadmill, or you've run out of game to play, it sounds like.
Yes, which is not something that happens for me, really. So, roll with it. It's fine. The other thing that I've been doing, I started streaming the PC version of Killer 7.
Yeah, that's something.
Yeah. It is unavoidable how weird that game is. I still love the style and love the seriality. I've got problems with the PC port. It is pretty ramshackle in terms of user experience. the control and play experience in the base game is already pretty rough shakes. So it's hard to, they weren't exactly starting, let's say with a surplus of goodwill on that part, but like it just, you can just tell it was kind of a rush job in every way except visually, which is a bummer. However, I don't know. I'm down to be in that fever dream for a little bit and try and explain it to people who are tuning in halfway through and saying, no, you really, by tuning in halfway through, you're not actually that far behind somebody who's been watching the entire time. So it's fun to try to hammer that home for people. Jala and Ben, you were in the audience intermittently. Do you have any questions about that?
I hadn't seen the game before, so it looked like an interesting style, or it's like on rails like that. But mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember I listened to the WAF 50 million years ago, and then most of it fell out of my head, other than the fact that it was, you know, a highly stylized game. And I was like, I'll put a pin in that just somewhere in my brain. And so when you were streaming, I'm like, oh, I need to come see what this is. And then I come see what it is, and I'm like, I have no idea what's going on. Okay, I'm glad I'm not playing it. I'm glad that it is Cole that is playing it, and yeah. I am just watching to see what is going on with this. I am satisfied. So yes. You have yeah. satisfied a pin which I had put in a long time ago. Whenever you put it on the WAF, and that was like forever ago.
That was five years ago. Yeah, it was 2014. Yeah, it was the spring of 2014 that we did it.
Yeah, it was a bit.
Yeah. So. No, it's you know, so when you have a game like that and the popular narrative is like, oh, this is just crazy, it's impossible to understand, you know, this is impenetrable, not impossible to understand. What's happening is actually really simple. It is just so oblique in how it presents it, and it presents it in a way that this will only make sense in hindsight. That like it is a little bit like I want to just kind of stop and give just like a summary of exactly how that fits in. But I feel like that would be a disservice to the audience, because the disorientation is part of it, which if is pretentious and speaks, I think maybe if you need to obfuscate what you have going on, there's a chance it might not be that good in the first place. Otherwise you wouldn't obfuscate it. So it's tricky in that regard, I would say.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought just like every game he made was basically a revenge flick.
Oh, he definitely does like the exploitation style stuff, and it's gotten more like that. I think Killer 7 is a little bit where that started. This is still edging into the previous kind of surreal stuff that Suda 51 had done.
Ah.
Yeah.
Let It Die or whatever?
No, I never played Let It Die. I also never played. Let It Die really bounced off of me. That is the roguelike souls-like. We did a Bonfireside Chat episode about it. I didn't really care for it outside of the aesthetics, which is kind of Suda51.txt. How do y'all feel about doing the multiplayer?
I feel like we should do it.
Buttons.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and you, the nice people, answer it. David, what is the question that you asked the nice people? It was David's question this time.
Yeah, sort of.
The question of the day is, it's well known that The Level is the official podcast of Greta. Therefore, today's question is about your pet. If your pet were a video game character, what sort of character would it be?
Yeah.
Also note that according to Duckfeed bylaws, children, Roombas, and non-self-aware AI can count as pets. Also note that according to Jala bylaws, you know, by the transitive property, if you are a pet uncle / aunt, that also counts.
Yeah.
So
pet adjacency.
Yes. If it is pet-esque. Yeah. So it was the base of the question was David's. Jolly gave it the video game kind of spin. Of course, when we say it's the official podcast of Greta, we're referring to Greta the cat, who you heard in the background earlier while I was talking. However, there are many, you know, there are pets. There are, you know, many hosts that have pets. I do not give Greta sole claim to that. So, I will get us started here with Lindsay, who says, "My dog is named after Ava, the king's pet from Dark Souls 2, because she is shifty but a loyal protector. So Dark Souls 2 is where she should be." That appears to be some kind of very cute terrier. Does that terrier also turn invisible like Ava?
Such a cute and fluffy, cuddly smoosh. I want to cuddle him.
Yeah. There's a visual component to this because people posted their photos. We can only respond, but because they are animals, we are probably going to say that is a good boy or girl, or yes. I want to eat those ears.
Boops and snoots.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there you go. I want to see if this dog can turn invisible, not because I, you know, and you know what? No, don't turn invisible, because I want to see it. It's a good dog. Let's see, Ben, what does Darus say?
Darus says, "I love this question. Our baby is a vicious monster that bites and attacks our faces every morning. His name is Mr. Poof, and he'll be the mastermind behind the operation. The villain's pet, but the one who is planning, but no one would believe it just because it's too cute. And it's a cat. In case the message did not make that clear."
Super Poopy. Also, congrats to Darus, who recently got married.
Oh, congratulations. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That is a very cute gray cat who looks very similar to Greta, actually.
Mm-hmm. But, like, with the youngness of Pocket. And the mischief, yes. Probably the mischievousness, it sounds like.
Yes, if Pocket. They're attacking you. Yeah.
Yes.
No, this is the scrappy RPG character who you think is a joke, but ends up being the person who tries to take over the world.
Right.
Yeah. Jala, what does Casey say?
Casey says, "Ruby would be the Skyrim arrow to the knee guard, old and grumpy about it, but still charming and not at all annoying."
There's big Skyrim energy coming off of this picture.
Very, especially with like the wood on the background, and everything. Totally.
Yeah. Spot on. You are correct about this animal that you know much better than us.
Yes.
David, what does the scoundrel Brian Wade say?
Well-known scoundrel, but Brian Wade says, "Leela would be the imperious queen of some cat empire, ruling over all she surveys with an iron paw."
Yeah, this appears to be...
Look at those eyes.
Ooh, yeah, long hair cat, which immediately, to me, signifies status. I'm trying to, with all these, think of who that would be. This would be Adea or Ultimisia from Final Fantasy VIII.
Look at that plush pillow that she's sitting on, too.
She looks well taken care of.
Yeah.
unlike when Brian betrayed me, so. It was 3 years ago, but I'm not letting it go.
Never.
It is still funny. Brian, I hope you know it's in good fun.
Yeah.
Let's see. Ollie says, "Murphy would be the duck hunt dog. One, he is a gun dog." Let's interrogate that for a minute. Two, he loves ducks. Loves them. Yeah. Three, sometimes he laughs at me. Not an exaggeration. He literally wheezes in mirth if I drop something at home. Okay, that rules.
Right?
Yeah. Good one. What is a gun dog? Does anybody know that? Because I have no idea.
Like a hunting dog, you know, like a dog that you take on the hunt.
Oh, so it won't like get startled if there's a gunshot?
Yeah.
Huh. See, I figured it was just like... the dog thing from Metal Gear Rising Revengeance.
Oh, yeesh. Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen that boss, but I can only
imagine.
There's
no picture attached to Ollie's message. We cannot confirm nor deny.
Yeah, cannot throw water on that. Ben, what does Cameron say?
I was going to say, pics or your dog doesn't exist, Ollie. Cameron says, "This is Ruby. She's a princess and rules over our dogs as any good kitty should. Based on her personality, I feel like she could easily take the place of road-blocking Snorlax from the early Pokemon games."
Ooh, yeah.
And also, there's a second picture that shows the dogs that she rules over. which also look very cute and floof.
Yeah, they also appear to be much bigger than her.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although I don't know, from that angle, she looks pretty.
She's flopped out.
Yes. She's all flopped out.
Yeah, she's flopped out. And when a cat flops like that, they're like a puddle.
They ooze. Yeah. They turn into a puddle for sure. Yeah.
Cats are liquid. This is so established. Jala, what does Chris say?
Chris says, my cat Frank would be a trusty companion who follows you around like a non-violent Pokemon or something. Hmm. And then also adds, then there's Jenny. She's usually screaming or trying to steal sips of beer foam. So she's that NPC who causes all the mobs to aggro. And both of these are good kitties. So. Yeah.
Some cats like the smell of yeast. That's why they go after beer. Yeah. Huh.
Yeah.
Good kits. Good kits. David, what does Austin say?
Austin says, my cat is Smeagol, named for the character, so probably Smeagol from Shadow of Mordor.
That cat has some real overly attached girlfriend expression going on.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
no,
pretty great.
Yeah, there's definitely some Smeagol in there. You're
that or just very, very alert.
Yes.
Caffeinated cat. Right.
Let's do one more go around. And we've got one that appears to be a lot, cause there are lots of photos here. One more go around. Nathan says Leia, a Mastiff, and Lafayette, the Corgi in the pictures. Again, you can see all these on the Facebook page. The stackable hounds are the main bosses of Nathan's house. There is a known issue with the peanut butter biscuit item. If the player has one on their quick slot, the hounds will stop attacking and begin to sniff impolitely at the player's pocket, opening them up for a visceral pat. attempts to patch this behavior have been unsuccessful.
That is a good answer.
And I can
tell. Also, those are some good flops.
Yeah, those are extremely good flops. And I can tell that you are holding them transfixed with one of those peanut butter biscuits off camera. That is the only way you could get them both to look in the same direction at the same time.
Yep. And sit so calmly and so still with that anticipation on their faces.
Yep. Yep. They are ready to pounce. I like how you wrote that as a Bloodborne description. Yeah. Ben, what does Paul say?
Paul says, I have guinea pigs, which are underrepresented in video games compared to cats and dogs. The only game of note is the adaptation of G-Force. They don't have much attack power, but they are quiet and low to the ground and like crawling through tunnels and hiding under things. So I'm thinking a stealth game. Their goal is to steal some vegetables from the kitchen. They may look sweet and innocent, but I know if I gave them half a chance, they'd devour a whole tub of spring mix and completely ignore their hay.
Yeah, for sure. They're so cute, all of them.
Yeah. I don't want to bring up the other game where there is a prominent guinea pig because it is too sad.
Oh, yeah, that was weird.
Maniac Mansion.
Yep.
Yeah. Please don't. I was going to say, Paul, please don't microwave your guinea pigs. I promise I won't microwave your guinea pigs. Yeah. let's see. Jala, what does Mike say?
Mike says, Gunther, pictured here with Rosie, would be the grumpy old mentor who grudgingly tags along with the hero but secretly is having a great time.
Hmm.
That cat looks to be kind of grumpy looking, but probably very happy to be with Rosie. So
yeah, it looks like a very patient cat.
Yes.
Rosie looks super happy to be with the cat.
There's only three more. Can we?
Yeah,
like,
we can do
quick?
That. I didn't see how many there were. Yeah. David, what does David say?
David
do
says,
you do that on purpose?
No, I really don't.
Okay.
All right.
David says, this is Mitch. He's smart. He loves snow. He hates robot dinosaurs. Take my word for it. Therefore, he is Alloy from Horizon Zero Dawn.
Hmm. I will take your word for it. Again, you know this dog better than we do, and who are we to cast out?
I love the Grinch feet. Look at those feet.
Ooh.
Those are some great feet. Those are some floof feet.
Yes.
They make me happy.
A tail as well.
Yes.
Let's see. Michael says, My buddy Connor is a short-legged Jack Russell, the perfect size for a Metal Gear sneaking operation. He is always on the hunt for a loose sock or milk bones rations. Did he keep you wait? And we see the Jack Russell Terrier wearing what appears to be a harness with a foxhound patch on it.
Yeah.
That's really good.
That's great.
I can't see a Jack Russell without thinking of Frasier. I know you probably hate that. Whenever somebody sees your dog, they think of Frasier. They think of Eddie. And then round us out. Ben, what does Jenna say?
Jenna says, "This is my terrier, Lawrence Larry, the first Vicar. Just like his Bloodborne namesake, he is equipped with a fiery attitude, insurmountable stubbornness, and insatiable hunger for mozzarella. He'd be a secret yet impassable boss to that everyone avoids, or create a build specifically to defeat him. Hint, I recommend a dex build with a particularly loud firearm."
Look at that tail. The tail is in motion. It is unphotographable.
Yes, exactly. You cannot even contain the tail.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you can't make it too easy to get the tail weapons.
Very good.
Although were there tail weapons in Bloodborne?
No. But it was still a good joke. I think that was only a thing in Dark Souls 1. Regardless. Hmm. Thank you, everybody, for sharing good pictures of your pets. Pets are too good for us.
Yeah.
Mine is super simple. Greta would be a BioWare NPC because, you know, when you're doing your thing, she's there, constant companion or whatever. When you're walking around from place to place, she is a constant chatterbox like a BioWare NPC would be.
There you go.
Yeah. How about you, Ben?
The closest one I could think of, the dog that my roommate had in Austin, Mika, was like a tiny white Japanese Spitz. I would probably put it close enough to Pikachu and that it would follow you around everywhere very nicely and would be very endearing to any humans that are around as well.
So. Oh, yeah. Japanese Spitz. They're Samoyeds. They're like clouds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. Mm-hmm. And they are so cuddly and cute. I love them.
Mm-hmm. How did that dog live in Austin? Oh, my God.
Shaved a lot, maybe? In the air all the time?
Oh, it's the first not too bad. It's the hard part was if you needed to get somewhere on time, it was very hard to walk around because you had to stop like every 5 minutes for people who wanted to pet her.
Oh yeah.
So. Yeah.
Irresistible fluff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How about you, Jella?
Well, my initial response when imagining this and trying to figure out which pet I would mention was that I'm basically Maria Renard for Symphony of the Night, and I summon all kinds of creatures. Like, to remind people, I have Rami the Cockatiel, Turner the Parakeet, Indra the Panther Gecko, Puffles the Schnoodle, along with several koi and doves and spiders living in the backyard. And I also have a couple of toddlers, my niece and nephew. So if you want to count all of these things, I've got quite a collection going on. So, but going down the main list of my babies, Rami would be a Wing Knight from Shining Force because he is so active and like always your constant companion. And he definitely does try to defend me from other people all the time, like everybody else. And like when I took him to the vet to get him checked out because he was having some tum trouble a while back, he actually was like trying to defend me from the vet. And he was so exhausted from fighting with the vet that he was like falling asleep on my shoulder, but still trying to like ward the guy off and still trying to, you know, get big and you know, squawk at him, even though he was about to pass out. So he was super sweetie. And he didn't bite the vet or anything, by the way. He's not that kind of a baby. But, you know, like he was making it unknown, you know, very, very well known that he did not want to be handled by this strange man, you know.
Yes.
So Turner would be like a familiar or a summon because she's just like around. She's always like, you know, ready. And she's super mischievous. Like I call her Turner Burner now because she just wants to watch the world burn. Like what she does now is she goes underneath her newspaper and shreds everything. So like she's like a little terror, a little destructive terror. So I think she would be like a familiar or a summon that would do, you know, do some damage when you get her, you know, pull her out. Indra would be kind of like a protective spirit, probably bound to my armor in a video game. And those are my main babies. I do not include Puffles in that because that is technically my mom and dad's dog. Yes. So
it is for them to decide which video game character they are. They would be.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
how about you, David?
So it's ironic that I came up with this prompt because I have no pets, no Roombas, and no non-sapient AI. Or no,
and you're
no...
not, and you're not pet adjacent either, are you?
No, I feel like you know, now that the Furias have kids, I think the his cats have like some sort of inverse adopted me or something, because you know when I go there, you know they are generally overjoyed to, you know, have someone that, you know,
gives
is not
attention.
A small toddler.
Yeah.
And also, so, they think you might have
and
food.
And I don't know what they would be.
Not your favorite thing, palicos?
I suppose yes, they could be the palicos, because palicos are best game pets.
Nice. Well, thank you everybody for participating in that. If you would like to get in on this on Monday afternoons, go to facebook.com/thelevelpodcast and watch for the prompts to go up. Thank you, David, for thinking of the question, and thank you, Jala, for posting it.
Yoo-hoo!
The End Boss.
Now it is time for The End Boss, where we quickly talk about something in the news related to video games that is exciting to us. I will get us started off and set the pace. So Pokemon has many regions, right? The Kanto region, the Sinnoh region, stuff like that. The Alola region. Turns out, though, there may be a region of Pokemon for the Pokemon in your brain. So specifically, if you grew up playing the original Pokemon games a lot when you were little, there may be a part of your brain that lights up when you see one of the original 151. This was the result of an article that was published in the journal Human Nature Behavior, where basically they're trying to find a correlation between memory and stored information and recognition and regions of the brain. And they just basically on a whim said, yeah, people who played Pokemon, they spent a lot of time looking at these things. And they put them under scans and did a bunch of kind of comparisons and things like that. And they identified a region called the occipitotemporal sulcus, which in all of these people, lit up when they saw one of these Pokemon compared to other images. This is not specific just to Pokemon, but it was a wide enough phenomenon that they were able to find a population who basically were all exposed to these images and sounds at the same time, for a long time. This may be related to eccentricity bias, the idea that, you know, we just saw those images so big because the Game Boy was right in front of us. But who knows? I just like the idea that Pikachu lives in your brain and can light up your electrons whenever he wants to.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Let's see here. Jala, how about you?
So if you missed it, Assassin's Creed Unity may be helping out with the reconstruction of Notre Dame, even though it's not 100% faithful to the actual building due to artwork copyrights and other things like that. It is actually in discussion about using it as a partial reference in the reconstruction process all the same. And nice. That's all I got to say about that.
They're going to make it more climbable in real life.
It's going to be haystacks everywhere around it.
Yep. lots of eagle jumps.
Mm-hmm.
Oh man. David, how about you?
Yeah, so I've got kind of a short one about The Division. So one of the kind of interesting things is that the initial armor you start out with is all like really crappy and has descriptions about how you know, your boots somehow keep more water inside them than they do outside. And Are you sure that a protective mask is supposed to let in this much dust and stuff like that?
Okay.
Once a week, they do kind of a question and answer state of the game cast, and in one of the recent ones, they revealed that those actually were based on real experiences from one of their developers who spent some time in the Swedish military. In particular, apparently they were issued government issue gloves that somehow would remain damp even after being left for hours in front of the fire. So also I love his final quote. He said, quote, "Not all this stuff was that bad. Some of it was okay. We didn't get to use it, but we knew it existed."
What's the saying? When you're getting ready to jump, remember that your parachute was made by the lowest bidder.
Yep.
Yeah. I like that, as opposed to, because you got to make the starting stuff sound shitty. You have to make it sound mass produced. That's good. Yeah. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, I got an article that I'm kind of excited about. Kind of like a side part of it. So, Valve has announced a new VR system that they're going to make. It's called the Index. It's kind of like an upgrade of the what they had before. What was it, the Vive? The main difference is the controller is a little bit different. They call it the Knuckles. You strap it onto your hands, like by where your knuckles are. And each controller has 87 sensors on it, and so it
Wow.
can tell if you're moving your fingers around. And so they released a demo along with this where it looks like a portal type droid. It kind of looks like a GLaDOS, like asking you to give it a high five and do different things with like gestures, like as a demo, so that you like know how the control works. But the exciting news is that you're developing three different games for VR exclusive, and I think they've said that some of which will be expanding upon like previous games that they've done. So possibly they haven't said which one, and plenty of people have asked them. But like possibly like a VR Left 4 Dead or a VR Half-Life or something like that, or like whatever would be, I'm sure people would be really excited over. Yeah, so it looks really cool. The downside of this is the price tag. Depending upon what you buy, because these are all kind of itemized, or you could buy them all in one bulk. If you buy everything in one bulk, it's $1,000, which is probably
Shoot.
the highest thing. Yeah, the highest thing that I've heard on
It's
for sale.
closer to what like the previous VR systems launched at. I think the Vive launched at like 800 or something like that.
Yeah, so probably adjusted for inflation, that's probably about the same price as that. Yeah, and they even said like in their release that this is like for somebody who is like a hobbyist of this and like has spare income type thing. They're not, I don't think they're, yeah, because they haven't like announced any of the games yet. You can pre-order this, I think, as of 5 days ago while we're recording this. Like May 1st is when you could pre-order it, and they're going to release it sometime in June. But I'm definitely excited to hear like what type of VR games that they might be releasing,
Well,
because
they're also going to be spying on your ass. Remember when I had that new brief story a little while back about that? So, like, also be aware that they're going to be spying on your usages for their R&D department, for their ability to manipulate all of the regions of your brain with your device. So, yay. I mean, they said that in no uncertain terms on that article that I was referencing a while back. So just be aware. Buyer beware. That's all. So, yeah, have fun.
It is either $1,000 or a vial of your blood. Make your
Yep.
choice. Oh. Yeah, no, I was I saw that the I heard that it was expensive. So it was built up so much. $1,000 is obviously a lot of money. That is not as much as I was expecting based on what I
Yeah.
was hearing.
I guess like one silver lining is it's backwards compatible. So like if you already own the Vive, you could just buy like the controllers for the update if you wanted to.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
What are you doing, Greta? Oh my God, she's like up on my shoulders. Sorry. I just she's being real crazy. Sorry.
Like a pirate cat.
Kinda. Now she's balancing on the back of my chair.
So did I tell you I was riding the bus a while back and I saw a guy riding a bicycle with a cat like perched on his shoulders.
Huh. Yeah.
That seems incredibly questionable.
You know, might just be a chill cat.
Yeah, the cats, if there are chill cats, they will literally just climb on your shoulders and just lay there and be fine.
Yeah, it's because it's warm.
But on a moving bike?
Yeah, whatever. That's where the warmth is. It's fine.
Cats can jump off and be fine.
Yeah.
A bike doesn't go as fast as a car or anything, so.
I'm trying to figure out whether to attribute the weirdness to the cat or to New York City.
Mm.
And, you know, some of one, some of another.
Yeah. Well, how do you all feel about buttoning it up?
I feel buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Level. If you haven't, please consider going to Apple Podcasts and leaving a rating or review. It does help us out. We've gotten a bunch of reviews in for other shows, not one for this one recently. So if you're new here, consider that to be a favor to all of us. Otherwise, though, you know the things you can do. Patreon. We all do streams. I guess everybody except for David does streams. Sorry about that. Yeah. I didn't mean to.
I slack off on other people's streams.
He totally does.
I did not intend to generalize you away, David. I'm sorry. But yeah, you can find that information at the end of this show, which I can do right now. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at Duckfeed TV.
I've been David Meismith. You can watch my streams on everyone else's streams.
I'm Jellichon in places, including Twitch.
And I'm Ben Merkel at Merkel B on Twitch.
And stick around for some titles. Okay, who has what?
I have a few.
Okay.
I have one.
Good, go ahead, John.
Enthusiast of BS. Historical maybe?
Okay.
Herodotus seems pretty cool. And then also related to Sam, without him, we wouldn't have Greg.
Okay. What one do you have, David?
So I have brain box.
What was that related to?
That was because I said somebody's brain box, like what is inside their box and what isn't for the company.
Ah, okay. Gotcha. Ben, what do you have?
I also had a one title week and I had Business Cistern.
I had Pleasure Cistern.
Okay. Well,
wait, what was
fight.
It? Cisterns. We're talking about the cistern.
Oh, cistern.
Which
okay.
Cistern did Dennis fall into? Yeah. The world may never know.
Yeah. So I had Pleasure Cistern and I had Jiggle Boats.
Yeah.
Wow. So no overlaps.
No overlap.
Does anybody want to make an impassioned plea, or do you just want to leave it?
I like the Herodotus related ones, but you know, I'm obviously biased.
Herodotus seems pretty cool.
Jiggle Boats is pretty funny too, though.
Yeah,
but you know, whatever, that's fine. It can just be a me thing.
Herodotus seems pretty cool. Seems pretty good.
Yeah, right. Let's do that.
Cool.